Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Emotionally Exhausted Woman, Why You're Feeling Depleted and How to Get What You Need, by Nancy Collier, narrated by Stephanie Richardson. Publisher's Note. This publication is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regard to the subject matter covered. It is sold with the understanding that the publisher is not engaged in rendering psychological, financial, legal, or other professional services. If expert assistance or counseling is needed, the services of a competent professional should be sought. Introduction. Who's taking care of you? Who's taking care of you? This one question brings more women to tears than any other question I ask. After the tears, the response that comes is usually a simple, no one. Do you ever feel that no one is taking care of you? And perhaps more importantly, that you are also not caring for yourself? Not in a way that's working? Women from every social, economic, educational, and racial background describe the same condition. It's like having an umbilical cord attached to me, but it only flows one way. Out. We spend our lives taking care of everyone's needs, playing our roles as caretakers of the world, being good girls and working on self-improvement, but often at the expense of our own needs being met. Have you always shown up for everyone in your life, anticipated and filled their needs, carried the emotional load, given everything you have emotionally, physically, and spiritually, given down to your bone marrow, and in the process, abandoned your own needs and turned away from something authentic and vital in you? Are you living in a way that's geared above all else to being liked? A way of being, essentially, that's missing you and what you need to be the truest expression of yourself? It can take a long time to become aware of emotional exhaustion. And by the time you do, you may have developed a host of strategies for coping with it or anesthetizing yourself so you don't have to feel it. You may have even accepted at some level that your needs are not going to be met and you're not going to get to be you in any satisfying way, and that maybe that's just the way it is. So, what are these needs that are not being met? What are we not getting that's resulting in our chronic exhaustion? While every woman has different desires and yearnings, there are certain needs that, when unrealized, create the emotional exhaustion and disconnection from self that's the normal state for so many of us. As human beings, regardless of gender or identity, we share a longing to feel seen and known, and more specifically, to be seen and known not just for what we do and provide for others, but who we genuinely are. We share a desire to live authentically, to be real, such that our outer experience is in alignment with our inner experience. To live a life that feels like our life, a life in which our truth is included. Finally, and maybe most universally, we all yearn to feel loved and accepted without criticism and judgment, which is the essence of feeling truly taken care of. We long for this connection not just from others, but from ourselves. If these needs are not met, or not met well enough, we end up in a state of depletion. As you embark on this journey, take a moment to ask yourself what kind of longing, absence, drive, experience, or burnout has brought you to this book. What hunger is going unfed in you? Sometimes your emotional exhaustion feels unavoidable and acute, but it can also show up as a kind of wallpaper feeling, a background sense of dissatisfaction and incompleteness, an emptiness. You might have a hard time formulating the language to describe your exhaustion, and yet you feel it nonetheless. What physical exhaustion is to the body, emotional exhaustion is to the heart and spirit. The condition manifests in many different forms: depression, anxiety, frustration, hopelessness, anger, fatigue, addiction, headaches, chronic pain, and insomnia. Any and all can be manifestations of emotional exhaustion. In order to replenish ourselves and reconnect with our fundamental vitality, we must first understand the cause of our depletion. We can't fix something until we know what's broken, can't discover our real strength until we can see what's getting in its way. This book was born from my curiosity and concern. After countless interviews with women, as well as decades of work with women clients in therapy, I was left wondering, why do so many women describe themselves as emotionally exhausted? Why do so many of us experience ourselves as people-pleasing shells of something we used to be, or never were but maybe could be? Why do so many of us feel cut off from what we really need and who we really are, untethered from some deeper well of nourishment? And more important than all the whys, what can we do about it? How can we rediscover ourselves and reignite our internal vitality? The cultural narrative goes like this. We are worthy. Our needs are valid. And we have every right to express our truth. On a superficial level, the idea of authenticity is applauded in our society. Be bold. Be who you are. You be you. We are encouraged to celebrate our uniqueness, voice our truth, and be us. That's what's happening on the surface. But at a deeper level, such a way of living sits contrary to everything else we've been taught and been taught to be. In reality, society's persistent dismissing and disparaging of women's needs, making fun of and negatively labeling women who openly express needs, idealizing women who appear needless and self-sacrificing, has led us to create a relationship with our own needs that, like the one modeled, is critical and rejecting. Stop for a moment and think about your own life. Consider the ways that your truth has been dismissed by others and how you too may have participated in your own dismissal. Despite all the progress we've made in the workforce, on the family and social front, the political stage, and everywhere else, so many women still believe that they're not supposed to have needs. Little ones, maybe, here and there, but not the real ones we actually have, and not the inconvenient ones. Needs are still seen as a failing, and like most everything else, our failing. This book is designed to help you become aware of your needs, and maybe more importantly, your relationship with your needs. To show you how to take care of yourself from the inside out and not just play the part of someone who practices proper self-care. It's a guide for creating an internal state of vitality and authenticity that doesn't rely on finding the right partner, self-improvement plan, or facial cream. My goal is to shift your focus from taking care of everyone else to taking care of you, but in a brand new way, which doesn't mean not taking care of others. What's to come is a radically different approach to self-care, not the kind of temporary fix, feel-good sort our current self-care industry promises, the kind that ultimately fails you. I offer something deeper, more reliable, and I believe, infinitely more potent. One warning, however, if you decide to go on this journey, be ready to meet yourself, to unearth the you that's hiding under all the roles you play. Be prepared to see the you that's free from all your pleasing adaptations. Be prepared to change. My intention is to empower and encourage you to be more than just pleasing, more than just the parts you play for others. To dare you not just to know, but to speak and live from your actual truth. To help you discover who you actually are beyond your ability to be likable. Ultimately, this book is about becoming a woman for whom it's more important to like herself than to be liked. If that sounds like what you want and need, and if you're willing to commit to this process, a time will come when you will trust your own knowing and stand firmly in your own shoes. At its heart, this book's journey is about awareness. Through your investigation, you'll come to see the truths you've assumed about being a woman, the core beliefs you've been holding about your own needs, and the conditioning you've undergone from society, family, education, media, and everywhere else, conditioning that's made you seek acceptance over authenticity. You'll become aware of your training to care for and manage others' needs at the expense of your own, to disappear to yourself so as to appear attractive to others. Keep in mind, just by bringing light to your shadows, recognizing what's going on inside you, absorbing the message of this book, you are already doing the work. You are already changing. Going forward, I describe what emotional exhaustion feels like and also what creates it. I throw open the door to the likability cage, the trap of always trying to be and feeling like we have to be pleasing in order to be emotionally safe, not judged, and not rejected. I examine the individual bars that make up our cage and the behaviors we assume to keep ourselves inside it and keep ourselves likable. All the ways we abandon ourselves while imagining we are taking care of ourselves. I will lead us through the perilous and painful minefield of judgments, criticisms, and labels that our culture imposes on women, and we impose on ourselves. From difficult, to high maintenance, to control freak, the whole arsenal of threats that keep us silent and our needs in check. I look at early family environments, how your caretakers responded to your needs, and how that shaped and distorted your own beliefs, as well as your strategies for trying to get your needs met. Along the way, I unpack core beliefs, those imagined truths and assumed realities lingering in the shadows of our mind, which ultimately shape and guide our behavior. Core beliefs that kick up guilt, shame, and judgment, and if they stay in the shadows, continue getting in the way of what we need. From there, we take a deep dive into the $11 billion self-care industry, the system that ultimately fails to address or remedy the real cause of our exhaustion. And do I offer a solution, you're probably asking? Yes. A fundamentally different approach to taking care of yourself. Practical, boots-on-the-ground tools for living a self-caring life, for being you in the world. A way of relating with the purpose of telling your truth rather than ensuring your likability. This book is a guide for how to live as a woman who knows that her experience matters and that she matters. A woman who respects and attends to her own needs and who trusts her own knowing. A woman who is unshakably on her own side. If you're still listening, my guess is that you identify with the feeling of emotional exhaustion, of not attending to yourself in a meaningful way, not getting your needs met, or perhaps not knowing what your needs even are. Or maybe the hope and possibility of a more truthful and vital life has kept your attention. Either way, it's good news that you're still here. It's easy to talk about it, but living as a confident and truthful woman who also has needs is not easy. In fact, it can be downright risky. We face serious judgments for being who we really are, from men and women, ourselves included. Our conditioning has taught us to make sure that no one is ever displeased, which often doesn't line up well with being strong, visible, and genuinely honest. Tucking away our needs and our experience and focusing on making other people happy can seem like the safer and wiser choice. But here's the thing. You don't have to abandon the people you love to take care of yourself. You also don't have to abandon yourself to be safe and happy. Over the years, I've accompanied innumerable women, a lot of them probably like you, on what I believe is the most important journey any of us ever take. From being whom you think everyone wants you to being who you actually are. It's a process of relocating your center of gravity and North Star from the outside world to inside yourself. It's a homecoming. No matter how many times I see a woman undergo this transformation, find her real voice, real needs, real strength, and real self, always in her unique style, I too am transformed. It's like watching a miracle every time. The sense of awe I carry for this process is ultimately why I wrote this book. I invite you to listen to this book carefully. Consider what it's like for you to be a woman in this society, the challenges you've personally faced both internally and externally. Examine the ways you've been shaped, trapped, or limited by your female conditioning. Pay close attention to how you relate to your own needs and how you allow or don't allow your needs to matter. You may find yourself asking, But what do I do? What does it look like or feel like to do this work? Where do I begin? The answer is simply to absorb the material. Allow it into your consciousness and let it work its way into your experience in whatever way it needs to. We can and must look at this together to effect change. I encourage gathering with others along the way to bring this awareness to a personal and cultural level. To that end, I created a reading group guide that you can find at newharbinger.com/50157. If you decide to embark on this journey, I would ask one favor. Promise me that you won't hold yourself to blame for what you discover along the way, that you will stay on your own side throughout this process. Let the words in this book mean whatever they mean for you. There's no right way to experience them, but do experience them. Don't turn this process into just another idea, another interesting addition to your self-care to-do list. Keep it real and apply it in your own life, even if you never tell anyone that you're doing it. Use what works and leave the rest behind. Not all of it will resonate because you're you and not anyone else and have lived your own unique road to here. Consider the completion of this book as a practice, one of listening deeply to your own experience and honoring whatever truth is uncovered. 1. Where did we go? The likability cage. Miranda is an intelligent, engaging, and exceedingly likable woman. But even with all her likability, an aroma of exhaustion, even confinement, is evident in her presence. She appears like a golden bird inside a gilded cage. That was the note I wrote for myself after Miranda, whom I never forgot, left my office for the first time. This 46-year-old, articulate, charismatic, professionally successful, stylish mother of two, desperately wanted help creating a bolder and more authentic life. But here's where it got really interesting. She wanted that bolder and more authentic life, even if it meant giving up the benefits and rewards of being so dependably pleasing. While I didn't know it at the time, that one phrase was the seed of what would later become this book. Miranda was a devoted mother to her children, a loving and attentive partner to her husband, a dedicated lawyer to her firm, a supportive daughter to her aging parents, a loyal friend to so many, what you might call an ideal modern woman. But in becoming all those things to all those people, she'd lost touch with her own wants and needs, who she needed to be to and for herself. Her own longings, as they existed separately from all the people she served, had gone missing. From the outside, Miranda was living the life we're supposed to want. She'd achieved and become everything our society tells us we should achieve and become. But on the inside, she felt cut off from something essential in her core, what she called her real self. She felt untethered from her true vitality and power. Now, bone-tired from becoming and pleasing, she wanted instructions for unbecoming and a roadmap for the return journey home to herself. She wanted to plug into something she could only describe as me. But Miranda had also spent her life cultivating the skill of being likable. She was afraid of needing what she needed and wary of the consequences for giving up her likability, which she imagined would be the loss of everything that mattered to her, her marriage, career, friends, and even her identity as a wonderful mother. The potential of not being pleasing felt threatening and unwise. She stated in no uncertain terms that she didn't want me to turn her into a lady who lived with cats, entirely self-sufficient and alone, a woman who belonged to no one. Miranda was emotionally exhausted and unfulfilled, but also highly skeptical that any kind of better life or even life worth living existed if she wasn't dependably pleasing. The likability cage. Belonging is a primal human need because it's linked to our survival. Belonging to the herd means we won't be left behind, left unprotected to die. But belonging is not just about being safe from physical harm. It's also about being safe from emotional harm, accepted, valued, and loved. We need to belong in order to feel emotionally and psychologically intact. Even though we're not living in the forest anymore and don't need the herd to protect us from being eaten, our need to belong still sits at the heart of everything we do. It still drives us. But here's where it gets tricky. As women, we learn that the best way to belong and thus survive is to make ourselves pleasing, to be what other people want us to be. Likeability then becomes our driving force and the operating system running below everything we do. Being liked means being included, wanted. And yet, this drive and pressure to be likable, while useful and protective in many ways, also becomes our cage. We start managing and controlling our behavior, accommodating, adjusting our wants and needs, and adapting our personality in an effort to be pleasing, which then becomes who we think we are. The old story. It's challenging to unearth the roots of women's exhaustion. When we approach the topic, we end up falling into our cliched ideas about women who do too much. We jump to visions of the type A, ultra-competent superwoman, the dynamo in the boardroom, bedroom, kitchen, and PTA. We envision the woman who can't say no and who asks for and receives nothing for herself. Because we've internalized these stereotypes, when we hear about women who feel depleted, we slide into the habit of holding women responsible for, among other things, failing to properly take care of themselves. The overarching message, once again, is that if you're not getting what you need, it's probably your fault. When investigating your own exhaustion, I urge you not to fall into this trap. Your exhaustion is not your fault, even if you are a superwoman. These well-worn cliches and narratives about women who do too much, coupled with the layers of complexity contained in this issue, make it a difficult one to unpack. It's no small task to freshly investigate your needs as a woman, honestly unravel the roots of your emotional exhaustion, and understand what makes it so chronic. It's equally challenging to come up with new and elevated solutions for the depletion that may be your current state. It can feel far easier to revert to the current crop of easy fixes, buying that shearling throw pillow or taking a sound bath, rather than investigating what's really unfed in you. In truth, the odds have always been stacked against us women when it comes to getting our needs met, or taking care of our own needs for that matter. The problem, which I address more deeply in later chapters, is that the very idea and practice of taking care of ourselves runs contrary to our most powerful conditioning, namely, to be selfless and self-sacrificing. It flies in the face of the more pervasive messaging that continually reminds us that we shouldn't need anything for ourselves. This chasm between who we're supposed to be and who we are, between what we should need and what we do need, sits at the heart of our emotional exhaustion. The perfect woman. When I was a teenager, my uncle told me a story that raised questions that never fully left me. The story was about a man my uncle had known for many years and also about the man's wife. Apparently, this man ventured out on most evenings. He could be found in the local pubs with friends, drinking buddies, and women. Lots of women. Occasionally, he would check in with his wife from wherever he happened to be drinking, presumably to inform her of his whereabouts. When he did call, his wife always repeated the same words, which was the point of my uncle's story. "Whenever you get here, I'll be waiting for you." I remember clearly how the men in my family reacted, how they oohed and awed about his wife's response. "Wow," said one. "Where can I buy that perfect woman?" while another asked if she had a sister. Despite all of our progress as a society, there remains a strong and pervasive idea of the perfect woman. What's your picture of her? Is she strong, beautiful, smart, fit, helpful, confident, generous, loving, kind, forgiving, self-sacrificing? Does she fill everyone's needs but need nothing for herself? What does she offer that makes her so special and desirable? Thankfully, this perfect woman image is changing with expanding gender identities, lifestyles, career paths, body types, and overall ways of being a woman in the world. And yet, the perfect woman image remains an ideal, a model for femaleness, and a strong should in our female psyche. Ask yourself, when you're not able to be this perfect imaginary woman, do you still believe that you should be her? Do you get frustrated with yourself because you can't meet this standard? Our internal critic is often the voice of that should, the shamer and blamer that criticizes us for falling short of this female ideal. It's striving to be the perfect woman. We are striving to be what we think will make us more desirable, more aligned with what's wanted. But in doing so, and judging ourselves for not being the fantasy, we're actually strengthening the bars of our cage. Always and forever available. We learn a lot of things when we're young, often from watching our mothers and other women. We learn that being perfect means being available. Always available to other people's needs. Being willing to move our own needs to the back burner when others' needs appear. Ask yourself, if a friend, relative, coworker, or even stranger is in need, are you inclined to drop whatever you're doing to help out? Is saying no an unspoken taboo in your inner world? In my uncle's story, part of what made this man's wife so perfect, a woman men wanted to buy, was the fact that she was always available to her man. She was waiting at home to receive him with love and without questions, needs, or expectations, available to serve him when he needed it. But holding ourselves to a standard of unrelenting availability, while it may make us more popular and desirable, ultimately reinforces the belief that we are valuable because of our availability. We are liked because we put others first, which then keeps us enslaved to the same behavior and the same exhaustion. Hypervigilance to what other people think of us. In order to stay likable, we've learned to stay vigilantly attuned not just to other people's needs, but to what other people think of us. Consider your own experience. Are you hyper-focused on other people's perceptions of you? Do you trust and prioritize their perceptions over your own? Throw out your own knowing in favor of their opinions of you? It's logical, in some sense, to focus on getting other people to like us. If we're successful at it, chances are we won't be rejected or abandoned. But in focusing our attention and energy on what other people think of us, or what we think they think, we end up farming out our self-esteem and self-experience, our very identity, to family, friends, partners, experts, and whomever else we think might know us better than we know ourselves. We hand over our most intimate and essential questions. What's my truth? What do I want and need? What makes me like myself? Who do I think I am? These are then replaced by, who do you think I am? How do you think I'm doing? What do you need me to need? And who do I need to be so that you will like me? When it comes to the answers to life's most important questions, we've learned to trust others in place of ourselves. Consequently, we never become the ones who know better, never become the authority in our own lives. Dismissing ourselves. With our attention focused on others' needs and perceptions, and naturally on satisfying those needs and shaping those perceptions, we quickly learn to distrust and dismiss our own experience. We disregard our own knowing, imagining it's wiser to stop listening to our truth and reject ourselves as a source of wisdom. Eventually, we stop believing that we can be trusted to determine what's best for us and even to determine our own truth. As we imagine it, if we really stood in our own shoes and let our own experience guide us, we would lose what matters to us. And so, we hand our truth off to others to decide and, ironically, are rewarded for it. Are doubting ourselves because
Sample complete. Ready to continue?